So I guess I will try to give you more doubts than results in these talks, because I think there has been some claims which are not really well founded. So my plan is to talk of the talk is like that. I will give some remarks on current supernova search. We'll tell something on the local rates, in particular rate per unit mass. I will show you the problem of high redshift supernova searches, show how the results which has been published compare for the rate evolution, and say a comment about the relative rate of 1BCs and GRBs. So I don't need to say why to count for supernovae to you, but I mean, it is something I've been insisting for many years now, it seems I find it other people which have become interested to the rate, so that's good. This is a, like to show this, which is a record of the supernova discovery in the last 25 years, and the events which occur, so which prompted the new searches are marked. And you see, I like to point to the last bin, which shows that it looks like in 2004 there was a decrease of interest, but now we see that we are still climbing, and the last year was just over 350 events. This is the same plot in a logarithmic scale now, which highlights that the number of bright supernovae remains more or less constant, independently of the fact that we are searching much more. So in red you see the supernova brighter than 14 magnitude, in green supernova brighter than 12 magnitude, which are one every few years, even if we are searching. So it looks like that, I mean, this was interpreted, this has stayed like that since at least the 70s, and this was interpreted as saying that we, our search for bright event is complete, and then this was translated as a search for nearby event is complete, which is not the same things as I show in this plot. This now is the apparent magnitude distribution of nearby supernovae Z less than 0.01. In red are the events, say, between 70 and 199, and the last 5 years are the yellow line, and it shows that while the number of bright events remain the same, there are many faint new nearby supernovae which were previously lost. Well, we are indeed discovering new faint supernovae in these days, which is because we simply get deeper searches. So it's not correct to assume that the searches, certainly they were not complete in the past, they are becoming more complete even in the recent version. So if you have to have information, this is the distribution of supernova types which we are finding today, and you see that over half are type 1a, and the remaining, these are type 2. Then you have 1, B, C, whatever. But this is, of course, with no limit in distance. If we limit in distance to, again, 0.01, so where we now think we are more or less complete, you see that the large majority, half of the events, more than half, are core collapses, either type 2 or type 1 BC, and the type 1A are small fraction.
I would like a copy of that because I swear that I'm not 1A into people.
Okay.
They've been telling me for years that there's more 1As than
core
collapse.
No. Yeah. I mean, the
more observed, yeah.
The more. Yeah, yeah. So if you want to derive a number of rates, you cannot rely on discovery number, because they are biased in many ways. You need to use an approach which has been described, you know, in the 30s by Zwicky, It is what we call the control time approach. That means you base your estimates on a specific search where you know everything. You know the field, the date of observation, the limiting magnitude. You know which sample of galaxy has been searched for. Then you input what you know of the supernovae, the light curve, and so on, and you derive how long a supernova in that given galaxy will stay brighter than the limiting magnitude of your search. Then you have the list of supernovae discovered during that search, and you can derive rate, and you have the good things that you have a good account for the selection effects of the search. And the caveat was that you had a small number statistics, but now with the statistics is getting better. So this is what I have done a few years ago. Just a reminder, I was using some things which I now like to call historical supernova searches. They were all concluded in the mid-90s. And they are five different searches, mainly photographic. They were continuing for a long time, like many were going on for over 20 years or 30 years in some cases. And so the good things, the sample of supernova discovery was not that bad. They were 250, but then restricted to a specific galaxy sample that comes out to down to 137. And the total control time is like to say that if you imagine one single galaxy which you patrol four supernova for 25,000 years, that is the equivalent of the search. And this is still, as a result, the sample with the better statistics, which I think is a shame, but at CAIR they are working, they have at least a sample which is three times as large, and they are working these days. I was being in contact, they should give a result in some months. So the results of the computation are a table with numbers, and of course I don't want to go through details, but there are two things I want to mention. First, the well-known fact that the rate, these are per unit luminosity, are more or less constant in type 1a for different galaxy type, and 80% of the supernova in late spirals are core collapses. In graphic forms is like this. Here are supernova type, galaxy type, and the supernova types, and you see there was some funny things like these high rates in irregular, which we attributed to low statistics in that galaxy. So before the KITE results are coming out, I did a simple exercise to try to guess what the result would be. And what I did was the following. I took the supernova discovered in the last 5 years, again, where I think they are more complete, and divide the number using the luminosity of the galaxy in the nearby universe. And if I do this, and of course I take only nearby events, and if I do this, I obtain this plot. Now, I expect that the numbers are lower because, as I said, even present-day searches are not complete. But I do not expect a special effect different from galaxy type to galaxy type. There will be some, but not that much. So the good things, the type 1a supernova rate remain constant, and the problem, the apparent problem on the irregular is probably solved by better statistics. And the other things is that you see, if you compare the red to the yellow, you are still missing some of the core collapses nearby, compared with the rate estimates. And if I work out the number, it comes like this. These are the rates from my estimates from the searches. From the control time approach. These are the rates from the supernova searches. And these are the number of supernova which I think we are still missing today in the local universe. This comes out 20% for the type 1a, then look down, 45% for the type 2, which is okay because we know type 2 are fainter, so there is more extinction, so it's okay that we are losing more core collapses than. But then there is, you see, it seems we are finding all the 1bc. And since instead we expect the type 1bc behave like type 2, more or less similar magnitude, similar, you know, on average, similar extinction and so on, my guess is that these estimates, my estimates, could be wrong by a factor 2. So the real 1bc rates, my guess is that they will be possibly higher by a factor 2, what I've been publishing.
Factor 2 higher than this?
Yes, could be. Up to, let's say.
It's 20% already.
It is 15 and it can become 25%. But, yes, it is a guess based on what I see today.
So the same as the 1A rate?
The 1A rate, no, it will rise. No, it's not. I don't expect that to rise, let's say, the 1A rate. Local.
The 1BC rate, you're saying, could be the same as the 1A?
In average, yes. Now, we want to link the supernova to a stellar population. We did that with galaxy morphology. But is another useful way to look is to the galaxy color. So now we have supernova rates. Here is galaxy color, U minus V. And these are the rates, type 1a and type 2. Look first for type 1a, and you see that it stays more or less flat with the color. It's again for per unit luminosity. And now, since if you take galaxy evolutionary, the evolution of galaxy evolutionary models. The color of a galaxy, which is here or redder, is that for a passive evolution with the age larger than 8 giga year. Oh, yeah, thanks. So it's with the age larger than 8 giga year. So these points here, if these models are correct, these points here imply that at least some type 1a is coming from a long delay time, a few giga year at least. This is one thing. The second things to look is the rate of core collapse, so that you see tracks very well a model, which is a model by Kennicott, which the funny thing is that the scale. In the original plot, I took the line for a plot. This was the scale on that plot. Is the star formation rate per unit luminosity in solar mass per year. It was in coincidence, a surprising coincidence, with the supernova rate in SN units. So the point is, I did something wrong. Because but then, actually, it turns out that the coincidence was in the unit we were using. So I can work out an estimate of the link between core collapse supernova rates based on the initial mass function, which I take as Salpeter one, on the star formation rate, and on the progenitor scenario. I think, for instance, that the core collapse are stars between 8 and 50 solar mass. If I take this number, of course, we can argue if they are correct or not, but doesn't matter. If I take this number, it comes out that the rates in SN units scale is as the star formation rates times 0.7, which is sufficiently close to 1 to explain the previous plot, even if the coincidence remain. So remember that there is this 0.7, multiply the star formation rate solar mass per year, per unit B luminosity, of course, and then I get the supernova rate. Supernova rate, as I say, so far were per unit B luminosity. Why is that? Because unit luminosity is something I can measure, so I am giving a measurement. But in many cases, I mean, to derive some better guess on what is occurring, I probably want to have physical quantities more directly related to stellar population, because the problem is that bi-luminosity samples different kind of population in different kind of galaxies. So, say, per unit luminosity in a spiral or in elliptical is not the same things. So, we're trying to derive supernova rate per unit mass. We use the same sample as I used so far, and normalize the rate instead of the blue luminosity to the K luminosity, which is a better indicator of mass. This was become available some years ago after the two mass search survey. And then we use the relation between the mass and the B minus K color, which is derived from a model. So you see what I mean. Now, you need to keep this in mind if you want to input the number in another model. But the results comes like this. This is the rate per unit mass now, galaxy type, and you see that all supernova type rate per unit mass increases going from early to late type almost with the same trend given their error. So the conclusion for this was that most supernovae in spirals, even type 1a, most type 1a supernovae in spirals are for, let's say, a young, where young must be defined, but a young young progenitors. Another clue is coming. No, let's take now the elliptical galaxy, and let's see if we can find some other interesting evidence. Now we take the sample of radio galaxy and divided them in radio quiet and radio loud, and we compute the rate in these three different categories, which is were somewhat arbitrary, but just to see. And you see that the rate increased by a factor 4, moving from from radio quiet to radio loud, it increases by a factor 4. And the interpretation which was given is that the radio emission is powered by merging or interaction of the galaxy on time scale of, say, 1 giga-year. And these events are powering the radio emission, star formation rate, and with a delay, the supernova rate. So we now are having evidence that at least in some ellipticals, we do not really need long delay time for the type 1a. So the conclusion from local rates are this: core collapse supernova rate tracks very well the star formation rate. Most type 1a supernovae locally are for a young stellar population, let's say a few 10 to the years. Some, those in red galaxy, may be from an old stellar population, a few giga year, but there is this issue of the radio Lau ellipticals which must be checked. And the supernova 1bc are 15% according to the present number, but may rise to 25% of the core collapses. This is locally. Well, that there were two different population or delay time or whatever for type 1a is not nothing new. The first, I'm not even sure that this is really the first. There was a mention of even of an earlier paper. But in 73, Dalla Porta published this paper where it say, the main points inspiring the investigation are the separation of type 1 supernova at the time, not yet divided, and this, I admit, was quite confusing, into two subtypes occurring relatively in young and in old stellar population. This was one. And then, based on more statistics, there was a paper by Omler and Tinsley in 79, which says, again, in any case, most type 1 supernova must come from short-lived star. So this was already there since a long time, even if a stress again, at this time there was no clear subdivision between 1BC and 1A. If there are two populations, do we find differences in the properties of the supernova belonging to these two populations? And the best evidence which has been collected is probably this, is a histogram of the DM15 for type 1A divided by type 1A in spiral and type 1A in early elliptical and S0 galaxy. And you see that the two distribution, the two distributions are really different. I mean, there are a spread, and then you can argue forever if this is really elliptical or if this was really a peculiar or whatever. I don't look to individual cases, but as a whole, the distributions are different. So there is such evidence, which we still cannot explain. Now, supernova rate with redshift. A few years ago, say at the end of 1990, there were many theoretical papers predicting what would be expected the result from the new high redshift supernova searches. And at the time, I took one paper as a representative, is the Madao et al. Paper. These were the scenario they plotted. The observation were the local measurement and just one measurement based on three supernovae at redshift 0.4. And you see the three different, they say, if we could make a measurement at higher redshift, we could say something on the progenitor. The interesting things to notice is that the 1 giga-year model peak at around, let's say, point 0.6, 0.7, something like this. So, because of this expectation, the fact that we expect to be able to get good information from my redshift searches, we decided, as many other, but I will take our case to illustrate the problems. We decided to start a supernova search at intermediate redshift. And the problem there, you need to have a wide field imager to be efficient in a search. You need a wide field imager. We were using the wide field imager, the 2.2 of ESO. You need many nights of observations. You need a large telescope for spectroscopic confirmation. And you need to manage a huge amount of data. The basic of the search are very simple. You take one image one time, then another, say, 1 month later, take the difference, and a nice object will shows up like that. This is what seems simple, but then when you work out, it's much more difficult because there are many steps you need to take to go from observation to the rays. I don't want to go through, but there is many things that you need to do. You have a reduction software which is more or less efficient. Then the spectroscopy is not always available, so you need to find out some photometric way to distinguish candidates. You need to control your detection efficiencies and so on. So there are lots of things inside which can make things wrong. Let me show some events, some interesting cases. This is a relatively low event. I show this because this will be normally rejected in the high redshift supernova searches which are looking for type 1A for the cosmology. The reason is that it is exactly on the center of the galaxy. So you would say, this is likely AGN. And even if it's not, I will be able to do the photometry of this event. Very difficult. So this will be neglected. We were especially intended to derive rates, so we could not delete these objects. And indeed, it turns out a very nice type 1A. Okay. So second case. Now you have a faint galaxy, a nice object. This looks like a distance type 1a. And the typical spectrum you can have right actually object is something you see the noisy things. And the red is nearby events, which is scaled. In this case, it's relatively easy because we know the redshift. The galaxy emits a narrow line of which so the redshift is fixed, and so you only play with the events. And then we say it's a type 2. We are quite confident. Type 2 at point, say, 0.3. Notice that the interesting feature in all these rise redshift search, the interesting feature, H-alpha, silicon, whatever you want to see, goes out of the plot because of the redshift. Now, a more typical case. This is a type 1a, a redshift 0.4. You see here the events. This is the spectrum, which is fairly good because the redshift is not that high. But you see, this is a type 1a above, and you see that what you really would like to see, which is the silicon, is down in the atmospheric emission lines, which are not well, could not be well removed. So, this is quite typical. And also, again, we are experiencing a lot of contamination just because we didn't want to apply severe selection to the data. We were indeed finding AGN. About 30% of our candidate turned out to be AGN. And you see we had either Seyfert, a redshift 0.4, or quasars, a redshift, say, between 2 and 3. Then, these are the results of the confirmed supernovae. We had 34 confirmed supernovae from this search. The redshift, you see, is moderate, not high. The point I want to make is in the red are the type 2, and we are finding many type 2. Actually, for TIS, which is an unbiased search, we found mainly type 2, and type 1A are only 45%, let's say half of the sample. And this is what you should have in any kind of search. Magnitude limited, because it is true that type 1a can be discovered at higher magnitude, but type 2 are more frequent. So the compensation of the two makes that you should discover it. So one thing that already worried me was that how few type 2 supernova comes out from this high redshift supernova searches.
How does that depend on your control time? Because type 2 is bright for longer, so you may not see that difference, right?
You may not?
See them rise on your frame both in the pre and in post exposure.
But I mean, it depends how long, how distant are the two, the reference. The typical is 2-3 weeks. So of course, I mean, you may miss the long plateau cases if you are unlucky that you get just in the middle of the plateau.
100 days. So.
Yeah, you will miss that.
Most likely you will not see that. Right?
If you are unlucky that you get on the plateau, because that will not happen for all. Some will be.
The majority will.
No, I don't think so, because if you look to the how many long plateau are between the type 2, there are not that many.
How many observations do you make of each?
I mean, in our cases, we were conducting the search per 3 years.
Yes, and how often?
It was very random, but let's say sometimes 1 month, apart for, say, 3-4 months, then we stay without observation for 6 months.
You have more than two observations then per calendar.
Yes, of course.
So then you wouldn't have that problem.
Yes. Yes, of course. Then we have a later one which we show. Well, but I think his point was more for the typical super, because one thing we do is we keep a record of all the candidates for all the when they accumulate. So we will, in case, we'll an event will disappear, but typical supernova searches just look to the two epochs and then trash away. But I don't think that is a major selection effect. The major problem is that they really look for blue events. That's, I think, is. I show this because this is the evolution of luminosity density. I show this because if you want to compare high redshift rate, a local value, you need to go through the evolution of the luminosity density. There is no way at the moment we can derive a rate per unit volume, because we are not sampling all the volume locally. And so we search individual galaxy locally. And instead of a right redshift, we claim to search a volume. Okay? So if you want to connect the two, either you convert the local rate unit volume using the local luminosity density, or the reverse. But this is the, what we know, and there is some uncertainty there. We can explain some of the odd results that there were some time ago. So before the new data, this was in last year where we were trying to have the results of our estimates. I plotted all the number available for the rates at that time, type 1a, okay? And I put all the number and just make a fit with a line, and it comes out something like this, which, I mean, there is some point which is not really constraining anything, but it looks like there was some evolution. And for what concerned the core collapses, there were no measurements at the time. We put a measurement here, which showed a big increase, a factor 3 between local and redshift 0.3, which at the time we thought it was a bit disturbing. It looks too much. So we were keeping controlling what the data and checking what was going on. But then we choose some of the recent paper which show the history of star formation taken from other measurements, infrared, UV, and so on, luminosity. This is from a paper of Ippelein. And over there, we plotted the core collapse rate scaled with the same number as before. So supernova rate scaled with the star formation rate times 0.7 put there, and there is a very good agreement, which seems that we are getting from supernova core collapse, this is what we really are expecting from the history of star formation rate. Now, the more recent results. There were these two papers by Dalen and Strolger, which published a new measurement of the type 1a rate, I redshift, and they deduce that to explain this, that I see as a sharp rise of the rate at about 4 or 5 giga a year from Big Bang, you need to have a delay time which is made like that, a narrow Gaussian with a delay, average delay of 4 billion years. So this, I mean, first of all, notice that the peak here is 0.7, 0.8. There must be something in evolution in the modeling, because Madao say that with 1 giga year it was going to produce a peak, almost the same star formation rate. It was going to produce a peak at 0.7.
The star formation rate changed.
Not that much.
Yeah, because they used to think it was dropping above 1.
Ooh,
Madao? Yeah.
Not really in the paper, if you look.
Really?
If you look, I go down. I can show quickly. It was in the. It is this one. You see, this is the star formation rate, the input, even rising. I don't know.
The original Madao plot, it went down, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's talking about the very first Madao.
First Madao plot went down.
The star formation
rate. Yeah, but I mean, in this model, this is the input as star formation rate, which is even rising, I don't know, but
I think that the current is that it's flatter.
Yeah,
right. It's flatter, but I say it's not that different. I don't think that I can explain. Actually, it will make a difference even worse, these things, the rising here.
Sure. I just thought it was probably falling because that's the original Madao plot was falling.
I mean, not in this.
I think
now, again, here I plot the measurement available before Dalen and Strogler, which are these. Then, these are the new the lane data, which seems a fair agreement locally. And then there is these things here. The fit, however, I have some problem with the fit because it fit very well the Irashid point, but it completely failed where we think we know better, which is locally. It stays even higher of their point, but higher of any other available observation. And you know, to get this falling down rapidly, you need to shorten the delay time, because that the fall down here is due to the fact that the star formation is going down. At least is that's what I think. And so to get this going down, you need to shorten the delay time.
But it looks like no curve will really fit both those yellow and red points very nicely at all.
Depends. I mean, I will go back to this. I will continue to this. Let me continue, because there are being additional points now, which come from a paper of Baris and Torrey, which fall like that. So you see that error bar. I mean, for these redshift searches, it's difficult to estimate the low redshift, because the area they are sampling is small. So the local volume is small, and is much higher than the higher redshift volume. But I would say that there is no problem up to here. Then here there is a major difference. You see the error bar of this and this point. And this point is usually, let's say, neglected. But this is the one with the better statistics. 40 is the Pan et al. Paper, which has 42 type 1a supernovae, all classified spectroscopically. And here there is one. So, the major issue, I think, is extinction correction. There is no extinction correction in that plot. Now, in many papers in the past it was written, well, but extinction for type 1a is negligible. There are a few cases, but typically is low. Well, we know that there are cases where extinction is large. Here is one single galaxy where you have two type 1a, one with 1.5 magnitude and one with 6 magnitude extinction, which, by the way, was discovered only by chance because people were looking deep to this. Otherwise, it would be go. And more quantitatively, if you plot the discovery rates of supernovae as a function of the inclination of the disk of the spiral, you find that compared with the Faison, when you tilt the galaxy, you are losing progressively more and more events. That this is extinction is clear, because if you compare this late spiral with the early spiral, you see that there is almost no effect in early spiral and is large in late. So extinction is large in late spirals. The effect is stronger for core collapse, but it is there. Not so strong, but it is there for type 1a also. I go back here to this point, because here now we have the core collapse rates, where to the two points I measured, I added the Daleng et al. Paper measurement. And the empty dots here are the no correction for extinction and with correction for extinction. And you see that the extinction correction is less important at low redshift, because, of course, when you move high redshift, you move in the UV with your search. And the more you go to the UV, the more extinction is important. So it's larger here. And you see it becomes quite a factor. This is the star formation rate, which were from the previous plot, the Ipelheim, so it's not from supernovae, it's not a fit of the supernovae. These are the star formation rate from other indicators, scaled on the same plot. And it looks nice. And this is the star formation rate adopted in the Daleng paper, which does not contemplate at all the local number. So it's by far too flat locally. And so you have if you take one thing, you have a factor, what they say, 2 or 3 increase in the star formation rate between 0 and redshift 1. And if you take the yellow line, it's almost a factor 10. So it makes a big difference. And now, on this, I shown again the type 1a. So my claim is, if you just ignore problem of statistics or whatever, and you simply say that for type 1a at this redshift, which I observed more in the blue, the extinction is as large possibly as at this redshift for type 2, which I think is fair, you will move this point from here, more or less here, and you will fit the star formation rate, the input. So this is the, there are the problems with the data, let's say. On these things, there will be later on Scannapieco talking about, but I want to mention this paper which recently appeared, where they were trying to fit the different things we know about star formation, so evolution of the rate with color, evolution with redshift, and so on. And they claim that to do that, you need to have two different progenitor scenario. One that they call prompty, which a very short delay time, and one that they call tardy, with a very long delay time. And many things are fitted, but notice that these are not fitted at all. So, thus saying, we ignore the redshift evolution because it cannot be fitted even with these things. And the other things which annoy me is that the things from this scenario is that in the local universe, 2/3 of the supernovae are from this tardy channel, while we have concluded before from local estimates that most type 1a supernovae today are from a prompt mechanism, well, let's call prompt. Okay, so this is in contradiction with what we have observed locally. So it doesn't seem really, even if the plot looks nice, doesn't seem really to explain what we... So conclusion for the rate evolution. Korkolak supernova lake tracks the star formation history very well. Supernova lake up to 0.8 are consistent with the short delay time up to redshift. And I would say that at redshift higher than 0.8, we just need more data. Let's now move for the last few minutes to what we can say, which is very little, of the connection between 1BC rate and GRB rate. So let me say first something about the 1BC. This is the distribution of the supernova type versus galaxy type. Now, as the one I showed before, but now in a narrower bin of galaxy type, where I noticed it is a funny peaked rate of type 1BC, much peaker than actually it's surprising, because the error of the galaxy morphology classification is probably larger than a bean, so it would be smeared out if it was there originally. But the statistic is growing. There are 156 events here, so statistics alone is probably not well explaining these things. I found interesting to compare this with the plot of the star formation rates per galaxy type. If I overplot the two things, there is a very nice correlation with the SC, which are the one producing higher star formation, and then there is probably a shortage in late type spirals. But this, I don't know if this can be said like that. But I would conclude that.
Shouldn't you get the same for the type twos?
Sorry?
Shouldn't you get the same for the type twos?
If you plot there, it's consistent the same, okay? But it seems to, I don't know how to say. Suppose that here you have a more massive star. It would imply to have an EMF different, which I agree is something. But if you suppose that when you have a strong star formation, we have an EMF peaked on more massive star, and suppose the 1BC are for more massive star, that would be consistent. I'm not claiming that.
But they are from the less massive stars.
I would say there are both. Some from the more. Yeah, I would say there are both scenarios. And now we want to compare supernovae and GRB. We must keep many things in mind. First of all, that the distribution ratio of supernova we know and GRB we know overlap very for only a minor part of the. And this is even worse if you look to the sky distribution. This is the sky distribution GRBs which we saw, which is very isotropic, we saw the other day. This is the sky distribution of supernovae, which are quite isotropic, but for the galaxy, which is here, is an equatorial view. However, if you look to the high redshift event, redshift larger than 0.1, remember that the GRB are redshift 1, you see that they are mainly on the equator. The reason is observations. You want to have the supernova where you can observe from both hemispheres. So the high redshift, since the telescope available are few. So if you now trying to compare the distribution, you know, with the previous one, and so finding coincidence would be really tough. Even worse, if you look for type 1BC. Because type 1BC, you see, at the ratio between 0.1 and 1, well, I've been discovered really a few. Actually, when I look to this, I say, well, even too few. There is, must be something here. So I plotted this is the relative rate of core collapse, now all core collapse over the fraction of core collapse over all the supernovae which are discovered, where I know the well-known fact that there is a decrease in redshift due to the fact that they are fainter. But now if I plot the rate of 1BC over core collapse with redshift, I also observe a decrease. So like if there were less and less 1BC per core collapse with redshift. I'm not claiming this is results. I would say these are in the data. And my interpretation is that this is, at the moment, we have no indication that this is a physical effect. It would be very nice to have this measurement. This is what I want to do next. But we don't have this. And let's see. Is this, first of all, is it is because type 1A, type 1BC supernovae are that faint? This is a plot by Richardson, a recent AstroPH. This gives the distribution of magnitude of type 1BC supernovae. And here, there are the type 1A average. So the distribution of type 1A will be something like this. So there are events which are even brighter. And since, so I don't think this is an explanation. I would. We should find.
You are mixing different types of 1C.
Yeah, everything.
I think that's rather different types. I mean, the hypernovae, I think, are not the normal 1BCs.
Yeah, but let's say, I'm not claiming, I'm just saying that there are a few 1BC at high redshift of all types. Hypernova or not hypernova, there are a few. You would probably say that these are the hypernova, let's say. So they are 3 over. How much? 30, so let's say 10%.
I'm not so convinced of the AI, if I think of those, but you know.
But not me, but just say this is the way to speak. But I am doing a different, I wanted to raise another doubt. This is a comparison of type 90Y BW over 91T, and this has not been scaled by anything. It's the distance of the two galaxies, and then you plot the V magnitude, and these are the light curves. And so, you, at high redshift, if you have only the light curve, you know, up here, you will not distinguish the two events. Sorry? Let me next slides. This is a comparison of two spectra instead, type 1A and the type 1B. Remember that at high redshift, you are cutting the spectrum more or less here. And so, actually, you may even think, are you sure that this 2AW is 1BC? How you know that? I know because we have a nebular spectrum. Locally, I can do that. And you see, the white is the 2004AW and the red is the 91T. Okay, that is type 1BC, no problem. But this is the spectrum you see, I redshift this one. I believe that there is many of the event, ADR noise will be impossible to distinguish. So I believe that for the moment we must think that the decrease we observe is actually a bias in the discovery than a real effect.
But if you take the same two supernovae and look at the colors and the spectra and the light curve and everything, you should be able to distinguish. These are two different ones from the one you showed before. But if you look at all of that, you should be able to find...
In most cases, I would say yes. Otherwise, we will not be able to do these things. Yes, I agree. But you must think that actually you are not choosing the observation you have. In many cases, you have a few points of the light curve, which you pass through a line, which fit, you say, is a type 1A because the spectra is consistent. I take, so I'm not saying that all the type 1A redshift are 1BC, of course. I say that there is a contamination. And this is the explanation why I don't, I see a decrease on the rate of...
Wait, so let me just get this right. You're saying that at least for high redshift, there may be some 1Cs that are being classified as 1As?
Sure.
In these cosmology searches as well?
Depends how many. It depends how many you think that there are there. If you think that the people knows this, it's not that the people knows this, and they think, well, but what they usually do is this. Locally, the type 1BC are already less than the type 1A. Bit less. It was a factor 2 or so. The type 1C are on average fainter. So high redshift, I expect that the contamination is less. Say 10%. If this is 10%, it is not a problem. What I'm the alarm I put in there is that if the rate of core collapse is rising so quickly, while the rate of type 1A is dropping down, at redshift 1.5 you have only 1BC observation. But I don't know. At the moment, the problem is that it's not very difficult to have spectra at that redshift, which are telling. So it's really pushing to have something which is impossible. Good coverage of light curve and the spectra, so to be able to distinguish. Which, I know, I told you I was going to put Mara. So let me finish with this, which is the number we derived in a recent paper. So we say, we took an average galaxy, say the Milky Way. We say the average observed rate is per galaxy of GRB something like this. I don't know the beaming correction, but let's say something reasonable and comes that we have 10 to the minus 5, 10 to the minus 5, 6 event per year per galaxy. And let's see what we come out from that. Now take core collapse. So the rate of core collapse is 10 to the minus 2. Of these, we say 15%. Today we think are 1BC, and this will give a rate which is by far too high. So let's see, there is a subsection of a 1BC which has been called hypernovae, which may be 5%, at least what we know today, and that comes a rate of 10 to the minus 4, 10 to the minus 5 per year. But hypernovae are brighter, that is what we argued. And so they are easy to detect in a larger volume. Indeed, they are, on average, more distant than the average type 1A. And so we have a 10 times higher chance of detection, and we come with two numbers which look similar. That's all we could say. It's not they are the same number. They look similar. So it's consistent. But, as I told just now, the core collapse rate at redshift 1 is 5 to 10 times higher than the Z0. So this will rise this number again, 10 to the minus 4, 10 to the minus 5, which you can say is still consistent. So
your rate could be also higher in the higher redshift.
Well, not a redshift 1, because we know that is where we know them. We know them are redshift 1, so. But I think the conclusion is that only a small fraction of 1BC produce DRB. If this small fraction coincides with hypernovae, I don't think we are in a position to tell that exactly, because the number we are reasonably by order of magnitude. So it can easily be that it is a factor 4 or 5 within. But for sure, not all 1BC produce a GRB, as it has also been claimed. I think I finish here. Yes.